Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is science journalist Zach St. George, and we're talking about his new book, Snake Men: Rebels, Reptiles, and the Race to Name Earth's Creatures. Zach, welcome to the show. I have to tell you, this is a book I just thoroughly enjoyed. It's like, it was almost like a guilty pleasure, as a matter of fact, for me. So welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so glad I found this book. Now, this is a tale for the people who have not read it yet about the science of taxonomy overall. But it's also a real story about the people of Australia, and especially specifically the people who had handled snakes as a profession. How did you get to this story? Because this is a very odd tale, Zach.
It's kind of a bit like the book, like the story the book tells itself. The story of how I came to it is a little convoluted. I am a science reporter, and I was interested I became interested in taxonomy, which is kind of, on its face, quite a boring science. It's very much the realm of kind of obsessives and people who are really into counting scales and sifting and sorting. But there's at least two interesting things about taxonomy, I think. And one is just that most species on Earth we still haven't even named, probably, is what
right.
Most scientists think, which is kind of crazy. And then the second thing is that I quickly realized that the people who name species, many of them are quite odd characters.
At least in Australia they are. In Australia,
right?
There are wars apparently about taxonomy.
Yeah, I mean, it's maybe because it's the type of people who are interested in counting scales and that sort of thing. But there's some very interesting characters, and to say the least. And this book tells the story of a good few of them.
We should just briefly explain taxonomy for those of people who don't understand it. It's beginning with Linnaeus hundreds of years ago. It's the process by which we name a species of an animal and give it traditionally a two-word, either Latin, Greek, or now it's a variety of languages, quote-unquote scientific name, and then place it in order so that it sort of reflects the evolution of that species and how it fits in the great web of life. Now, that's what you're supposed to think it is. But it ends up that I thought taxonomy of all the sciences was going to be the most serene and sedate. But a lot of this book is about a person who was labeled by an entire community as a taxonomic vandal and shunned.
That's right. So, as you say, Linnaeus, the Swedish botanist, 250 years ago, basically gave us the broad outlines, the broad blueprint for how we still organize species on, in relation to each other, and how we keep track of them, which is with these names. And so this has been going for 250 years. And so in order to do that and to keep track of everything that's been named, taxonomists have adopted these sets of rules in relation to how you name things. So it's almost like the Constitution or something like that. They have a very strong reverence for these rules. But there's this funny side effect, which is that if you follow the rules, it doesn't really matter who you are. As long as you follow the rules and you name a new species according to these rules, it doesn't matter if your actual evidence that the species is real or, different from something that has already been, named and recognized. If you follow the rules, then other taxonomists at least have to give it a look. So what that means is you have people this has happened frequently over the history. You have people of kind of unusual or frankly lacking credentials come in and name things. And so this guy that's sort of at the center of my book, Raymond Hoser, has named a very large number of species.
Well, I want to stop you there, Zach.
Please, yeah.
There's a section of your book, okay, that's going to come as a surprise to a lot of people. It's specifically page 181 to 194, single spaced. It's all the species named by Hoser from 2013 to 2021. It blew my mind how many species there were. It's nearly 1,000 species he just decided to name.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he's got the title Taxonomic Vandal.
Yes, yes, allegedly.
Allegedly. And you did hang out with him for an extended period of time.
I did, yeah. I went, I was in Australia. I spent probably most of a week just kind of going around. And his day job is as a snake catcher. And he puts on, so if you get a snake in your house, you call him up, he'll come get it or at least look for it. And then also putting on children's birthday parties. So I went to a large number of children's birthday parties and to random people's houses to go retrieve snakes, which often turned out to just be harmless lizards.
But at these birthday parties, Zach, he's having kids handle Australian brown snakes.
Well, he pythons. He I think formerly... was able to have kids handle venomous snakes that had been devenomized. But I believe that I didn't see him doing that, and I think it's no longer the case. We certainly were in close proximity to some brown snakes, taipan, some of the other world's deadliest snakes.
Now, are you snake positive, snake negative?
You know, that was kind of a question going into the book. I had a garter snake when I was a kid.
Okay.
But my mom was like, "Oh, it has salmonella. You can't touch it." So I like had a sort of remove from my own garter snake, and ever since then, I would say fairly neutral. But I was like going into the trip, I didn't know how being around the venomous snakes would affect me. Like, I didn't know. I was like, oh, maybe I'll be scared of them. But I was pretty much okay with them.
I say, you have a general sang-froid with these snakes that are sitting in your lap, by the way, in tubs, while you're driving around with them. But that's another story. I want to still stay on taxonomy for a second. One of the things you also point out in your book is, you know, previously, or the first 150 years or so of taxonomic naming, it was pretty serious things. You know, you'd try to name it after a characteristic of the creature or maybe memorialize a person who supported your research. But then, especially in the 20th century, people started really doing taxonomy like for fun so that the names of animals would have things about like Star Wars characters and all sorts mm-hmm. of other stuff. And it sort of seemed like, and then people really went at it. And it really seems like taxonomy started getting bizarre.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know really when that started. Well, I think Linnaeus himself, who came up with this system, I think he did. He was kind of famous for naming sort of, you know, ugly and insignificant species after his enemies. So I think that sort of thing started right at the beginning. And you know, people over the years, yeah, I think probably it's gotten a little woolier in recent decades.
It's all in your book, man. It's pretty woolly. Maybe you're just used
woolly.
To it's pretty woolly. It's pretty amazing. And then because they followed the laws of taxonomy, it sticks.
Right. I mean, that's one of the funny things is at various points, people have argued that, you know, we should be naming things in ways that reflect sort of the characteristics of the species, or at least are dignified and not just like completely silly. But basically, that's been totally set aside. And so people name things just, you know, there's species named Ah-Ah and I don't even, you know, just like.
Well, there's one species that was named was named after, I think, a town in Wales that's got like the longest name of any town on the planet. And it's like.
Yeah, we were looking at it, me and when I did the audiobook, the, you know, because
did you actually say the name? Did you say the name?
No, that was the one that we didn't even attempt. I was like, I don't even, let's not even bother, because it like covers a whole line in the book, you know,
yeah.
Like a whole line of text. It's ridiculous.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is science journalist Zach St. George, and we're talking about his new book. I strongly recommend it. Snake Men, Rebels, Reptiles, and the Race to Name Earth's Creatures. Zach, there's a whole sort of sub-book in this book, which is the very odd history of who were originally called the Snake Men of Australia. And this is like especially during the 19th century into the 20th century. Let's talk about who they were. Who were these Snake Men?
Yeah, this is a... You know, this book, I tried to just kind of follow what was interesting to me, and the Snake Men were so interesting. This history was available to me because Australia has digitized all its colonial newspapers going back to like the 1700s. So what you see is very early in Australia's colonial history, after the First and Second Fleet showed up with many people, including many convicts and so on. What you see is for one thing, they're worried about snakes. There's all these scary snakes that are killing.
Well, there's a lot of poisonous snakes in Australia. There's a lot of deadly poisonous snakes.
Right, right. And so very quickly, there are people worried about these snakes. And then there are these mostly men, especially in the early days, who pop up and say, I have a cure for snake bite. And so they're sort of wandering from town to town. And basically the shtick is that they say, I have this chicken, I have this puppy, this kitten that I'm going to have this venomous snake bite, and then I'm going to cure it. And then, you know, they're giving this demonstration, shoot, the snake won't bite the chicken, it won't bite the kitten, but it bites the guy. And and then he cures himself miraculously. And then, you know, you kind of see them even doing away with the sort of show of the chicken and the cat. And they're just having these very venomous snakes bite themselves. And then they're curing themselves.
Not always.
Wandering from town to town.
Not always.
Well, that's right.
There's a couple of pages where you go over like an entire itinerary of the snake men and who they were and then how they died. And basically they all... sort of eventually screw up one way or another.
That's right. I mean, I wrote in the book, I think any livelihood based on taking bites from venomous snakes is sort of tempting to the gods. So.
Well, I think you also made it, somebody noticed that these snake men are always also alcoholics. And so that doesn't help.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to say, like, you know, I think everyone was drinking like pints of brandy in those days anyway.
Yeah,
so it's hard to say like if they're more alcoholic than the general populace, but they do seem by modern standards to be very drunk.
Charles Underwood was the first famous Australian snake man. Can you say a few words about Charles Underwood?
Yeah, Charles Underwood is awesome. He was this guy. He was at some point convicted for, I think, highway robbery in London and sent to the, you know, the penal colonies. And he's sort of, there's not much known about him in the early days, but he sort of bounces around. And finally he pops up and he becomes, you know, he makes more and more appearances in the newspapers as the Snake Man. And he's doing these kind of medicine shows that I've described where he's having snakes bite him and, you know, curing himself. And he becomes kind of a sensation. Like, there's a lot of news about him. But people are really unclear on who he is and, like, what his real identity is and are there more than one Charles Underwood. And then he actually acquires an imitator who is also calling himself Charles Underwood, the famous Australian Snake Man. And it kind of comes to a head and they conduct a series of duels with
this was amazing.
Underwood and this other guy whose actual name is Charles Shires, and they duel each other by snakebite, which is amazing.
When I read that section, it really reminded me of something like a Monty Python plot or something. Duel by snakebite. I mean, and first of all, most of these anti-venoms were just horse manure. I mean, it was weird. I mean, one of them was just derived from ferns, and it was obviously not going to work.
Right. Well, there's so many different things that people have tried.
That's
to
another
cure.
One. Toad urine. Toad urine was one of my favorites. Olive oil.
Yeah.
Wild radish oil.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not
the trick is that, you know, most of the time you'll survive a snake bite, maybe not from an inland taipan, but like most of the Australian snakes, you'll survive a bite. And what happens is kind of like a vaccine. The exposure primes your body, and so you become more likely to survive the next one. So the fact is that these guys were complete frauds. Maybe they believed it, but what they were doing, what they were selling, was unlikely to help anyone else survive a snake bite.
Great.
They were just going around selling, you know, quack medicine, which I guess is kind of in vogue right now, too.
Well, you know what was amazing about the story, though, as you tell it, is the evolution of that chicanery into actually the science of snake venom. Some of these people who actually wanted to sort of change the public attitude towards snakes. I mean, I'm sure people in Australia were just killing snakes on sight. Mm-hmm. But then there was the idea of an anti-venom, and this is where it goes right back to taxonomy, is because anti-venoms are only good if you know what species of snake bit you, and then you have to have the species-specific anti-venom.
Yeah, right, right. And so in the same period that these guys are wandering around selling their quack medicine and giving, just getting bitten by snakes and getting drunk and dying occasionally, there was a scientific effort to figure out antivenoms. And so, they eventually figure out that, like, okay, you need to, within a, you know, there's a certain tolerance, but pretty close, you need to have a pretty close estimate of what snake it is that bits you. And so that really helps lead to these snake men, actually, some of them, and one in particular that I write about, Eric Worrell,
kind of
taking on the mantle of scientist and becoming very interested in the taxonomy and kind of the more scientific, biological, ecological aspects of these snakes, which previously had been, as far as I can tell, sort of props to their shows.
Worrell is really interesting because he was the one that started milking poisonous snakes for the venom too.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And he was, you know, he had a similar background to a lot of the previous snake men. Like he didn't have a lot of education, but he was coming up in kind of the post World War II is really when he was coming into adulthood, and so he really had that kind of era's characteristic reverence for science and interest in, you know, some of the more serious aspects. And
he was still an amateur, or he was considered such by the academics. He would publish stuff in self-published journals about taxonomy that were lambasted by the professionals.
That's right. So he gave very serious contributions. He did a lot of snake milking. He had a lot of field knowledge. He knew a lot, but he didn't have academic training. And so when he tried to delve into this very kind of arcane science of taxonomy and name new species that he had recognized in the field because he spent so much time in the field, he didn't dot the right I's and crosses T's in the way that the academics wanted. And so they lambasted him for it. And that, as it turned out, kind of became a pattern within that I lay out in the book.
All of these people that are in this book are really fascinating and sort of quirky. There's two of them, Richard Wells and Ross Wellington. I got to ask you about something about the stories about those two.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a UFO? Did I read that correctly? All I remember is just kept saying something happened.
That's right. So Richard Wells told me a very interesting story about something that happened in his youth. He was out with some friends looking for snakes, and a very effective manner of looking for snakes is to just drive back roads at night, especially after it's rained or something, and you'll find snakes out on the road. So that's what he was doing, and this light appeared in the sky, and first he thought it was another car somewhere up in the trees, and, you know, go through all these, is it a car, is it a helicopter, what's going on, and then this light sort of goes out over the ocean.
And then something happened.
Then something happened, and he didn't actually tell me what it was. He never used the word UFO. He just said it's inexplicable. Like, you couldn't understand it, which is probably true. I didn't understand it, but, you know, he said whatever this mysterious event was, it had all these interesting effects. Like, it made him much smarter and able to read different languages and to see into the future to some degree, and had other effects on his friend that he was with. So,
and you visited him.
I did, yeah. Richard Wells is just an amazing guy. He's just, you know, like, when I met Richard, I was like, okay, I think I sort of understand, like, cults. A little better, because this guy is so charismatic and so smart and so fun to talk to. He's not a cult leader as far as I can tell, but he's a really fun guy to talk to. And he in the 80s with his friend Ross Wellington, sort of similar story to Eric Worrell in some ways, that they are sort of cast out from academia but have this deep knowledge of the reptile and amphibian fauna of Australia. And so they decide to name a bunch of species kind of outside the bounds of academia. So they published, I think, a couple hundred new species all at once in a journal that Richard Wells controlled, a scientific journal that was, you know, kind of gave it the feeling of normal science, normal scientific journal, normal description, but was in a journal they controlled. So,
yeah, I think the phrase they used in the book is that the scientific herpetologists reading this were incandescent with rage.
Yes. Because as I mentioned before, they followed the rules of naming, which meant that the academics had to at least look and consider what they had done and say, okay, are these descriptions, which are not up to the standards that we would prefer, are these descriptions nevertheless describing actual, you know, species out there in the world, or are they totally spurious, in which case we have to rebut them? So in either case, suddenly they had hundreds and hundreds of new new names that they had to consider.
Well, that's the thing about taxonomy too, and then you write about this, that there are the taxonomists who are lumpers, and then there's the ones that are splitters. And if you birdwatch, which I do a lot, that's my passion, that causes havoc on your year list. And you're sort of in the thrall of taxonomists. But after reading your book, you realize how weirdly, like, personal people take this stuff. I mean, we're almost out of time. But I got to mention that Hoser he had a whole other thing going on besides the snake stuff, because he was getting harassed by the police because he had published all these books insinuating that they were smuggling snakes out of, or involved in the smuggling of snakes out of the country. Mm-hmm. And there was all sorts of weird stuff going on. And he would publish books about this and then wonder why the police would harass him.
Yeah. I mean, I would say the harassment is alleged also. Anything around Hosier, I'll just say, is alleged because it's very hard to know.
Yeah, but he does have a real arch enemy, Wolfgang Wuster.
Yes. Who's a German snake venom expert who has also done some taxonomy and has been very skeptical of Raymond's taxonomy. Raymond has not taken very kindly to the skepticism. And so, he also, like Wells and Wellington, like Eric Worrell, has his own scientific journal in which he publishes new descriptions. And, the descriptions are sort of mixed in with railing against Wolfgang Wuster and the police. It's all sort of thrown in there together.
For people listening, you got to read this book because we've thrown out an awful lot of stuff, and it's all there in the book. My guest tonight is science journalist Zach St. George, and we've been talking about his new book, What a Story, Snake Men, Rebels, Reptiles, and the Race to Name Earth's Creatures. Zach, it's been a pleasure.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.